a lot of Alaskans are very unhappy with her, and it's for exactly this reason. You know, she takes a position in writing, says she believes in a principle, and then she waffles on it.
Critics accuse Senator Murkowski of changing her position on the Supreme Court nomination process. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, February 19th. Good evening, I'm Zachariah Hughes. Also tonight, Angoon residents weigh their options after a seal was found with high mercury levels.
I just don't even want to take a chance and feed my family or anybody else's family, you know, anything that's contaminated.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, sustaining Alaska's pipeline and its operations today and into the future. And by Raven Alaska, connecting Alaskans across the state for more than 50 years. Find more at flyraven.com.
Critics of Senator Lisa Murkowski are seizing on what they see as a flip-flop in her position on whether Barack Obama should be the president who chooses the next justice of the Supreme Court. But as APRN's Liz Ruskin reports, a flip-flop is in the eye of the beholder.
In Juneau on Wednesday, Murkowski said she expected Obama would soon nominate someone to replace Justice Antonin Scalia, and she clearly stated her position on what should happen next.
I do believe that the nominee should get a hearing.
Murkowski said Obama's nominee would not necessarily advance to a vote in the Senate. But by the next day, she was saying she didn't think there should be an Obama nominee. In postings on social media, Murkowski said it's the president's constitutional prerogative to nominate, but, quote, I urged the president to follow a tradition embraced by both parties over the past 80 years and allow his successor in the White House to select the next Supreme Court justice.
Well, this isn't any tradition that I've ever heard of.
Anchorage attorney Margaret Stock just announced she's running for Murkowski's seat as an independent. Stock says Murkowski isn't being true to her past position, and she figures Murkowski's bowing to political pressure. We'll get back to that in a minute. Murkowski wasn't available to describe what tradition she thought the president should follow, but the Supreme Court experts at SCOTUS blog have determined that at least five presidents since 1900 have nominated Supreme Court justices in presidential election years. It could be that Murkowski's tweet refers to a Senate tradition of blocking those election year nominees, because the Senate has done that a lot. Her tweet may have pinned the tradition on the wrong party, but here's how Murkowski herself put it to reporters in Juneau.
The history of what happens when there is a vacancy in the Supreme Court during the same year that you have a presidential election, the history is it's been 80 years that the Senate acted on that nominee in that presidential year. The thought being that the new president should have the opportunity to name this lifetime appointment.
That does nearly comport with Supreme Court history, because the last president to successfully fill a vacancy in an election year was FDR 76 years ago, unless you count Eisenhower or Reagan, but those are special cases. Margaret Stock, the Murkowski challenger, mined a little history herself. She dug up a column Murkowski wrote in 2005 for the Juneau Empire. Here's Stock reading it.
Let me make it clear that I support an up or down vote on all nominations brought to the Senate floor, regardless of the president nominating them or which party controls the Senate.
The column was about ending filibusters of judicial nominees, not necessarily Supreme Court picks, but Stock says she sees a big inconsistency.
A lot of Alaskans are very unhappy with her, and it's for exactly this reason. You know, she takes a position in writing, says she believes in a principle, and then she waffles on it.
Alaska Democratic Party spokesman Jake Hamburg says it's ironic that Murkowski's theme in her annual address to the legislature this week was delivering certainty to Alaskans.
The only thing that's certain is that she's going to change her position according to whichever way the wind is going.
Murkowski, when asked about her new challenger in Juneau on Wednesday, said campaigning isn't her favorite part of the job.
But I'm not doing anything different because we have a newly announced individual who's stepped up. Just going to keep working
every day real hard.
A Murkowski spokeswoman said neither she nor the senator were available to discuss her statements by our deadline. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
As Alaska's legislature digs through Governor Bill Walker's budget proposal, a prime focus is the overhaul Walker put forward for oil and gas taxes. By reducing tax credits and increasing minimum production taxes, Walker aims to shave $500 million off the state's massive budget shortfall. House members question whether Walker's administration has done enough analysis of the oil and gas tax changes, as well as other tax increases that Walker has proposed. Speaker of the House Mike Chenault, a Nikiski Republican, says it's important for legislators to study economic models showing how the changes will affect the state.
They were told basically they have no modeling, or that they were working on modeling. Well, it's hard to put together a tax bill if you don't have modeling.
The state didn't conduct statistical modeling before Walker proposed the tax changes. State Revenue Commissioner Randall Hoffbeck says officials focused on the fact that the state is committed to paying oil and gas companies more in tax credits than it has to spend. But state officials did talk with oil and gas company executives about which tax credits were most effective.
And we're really looking at kind of a multi-level process. One is, you know, which credits didn't necessarily work the way they were intended. Either they didn't get used or really the return on the credits weren't all that we had hoped that they would be. And secondly, you know, which credits worked really well and may have accomplished their purpose. And then, of course, the remaining is the credits that are still seen as critical moving forward.
Speaker Chenault is not convinced. He says the fate of Walker's proposed tax increases depend on the information that the House receives.
How those come out, which ones pass or not, I can't tell you until we at least hear them, understand them, make sure that the administration understands the consequences of the actions that we take as far as public policy for the state of Alaska, and that's going to take time.
Hoffbeck says more information will be available next week on the economic effects of the tax changes. The Anchorage School Board passed the district's preliminary budget on Thursday evening, but it could still change depending on state funding. KSKA's Ann Hillman has more.
The proposed $768 million budget for the next school year is slightly smaller than this year's budget. It increases the pupil-teacher ratio by one student in every grade level and cuts about 52 full-time teaching positions and three assistant principals. School Board President Cameron Perez-Verdia explains.
We have always prioritized our classroom and know that instruction and building leadership are the two areas where we need to preserve and we need to make sure that we're investing because that's going to have the greatest impact on student performance. Unfortunately, we've been put in a position over the last few years where our administration and our district as a whole has continuously been reduced, and it's making it harder and harder for us to consolidate and find areas to reduce.
The budget does include more special education teachers and paraprofessionals to meet a rising need. Most of the details were nailed down during Tuesday night's meeting, but the vote was delayed until Thursday. The preliminary budget passed 5-0 with two members absent. But Perez-Verdia says this isn't the end of the discussion because, ultimately, the budget depends on negotiations in Juneau.
Education is one of the largest areas of spending for our state, and so it's likely that they're going to recommend for further cuts. My hope is that they will hold the BSA, the $50 increase that's in there now, that will be held, and that we won't have to change our budget. But I think most of us think that we're likely going to see something different than we have now.
The budget is based on a $330 million contribution from the state. If the state funding is decreased, then the allowable local match will also go down. In Anchorage, I'm Ann Hillman.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a 74-year-old elder from Chivac finds two young men who got lost during a snow machine trip.
Somehow, somebody pushed me. Go.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on condor.com. Condor, born to fly. And by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the field. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
With his family watching from the gallery, the Alaska House of Representatives approved naming the Capitol's House Judiciary Committee room after the late state representative Max Gruenberg. The Anchorage Democrat died Sunday at age 72. Legislators paid tribute to Gruenberg on Friday after his wife, Kayla Epstein, read the morning's invocation. They passed a resolution to rename the room the Max F. Gruenberg Jr. Committee Room. The proceeding was delayed so legislators could correct grammatical errors in the resolution. Republican Gabrielle Ledoux cited Gruenberg's penchant for perfection in her amendment to correct a punctuation error. Salvage operations are now underway in Juneau to raise a 96-foot World War II-era tugboat that sank near downtown last September. The current owner has refused to take responsibility for the wrecked vessel, which could still be a pollution hazard, so the Coast Guard is taking charge, and they're leading efforts to remove and dispose of the vessel. KTOO's Matt Miller prepared this report.
The Tug Challenger is approximately 300 gross tons.
Still need a pretty hefty crane, though, right?
Yes.
That's Coast Guard Commander Patrick Hilbert, incident commander for the operation, and he says the wreck is a substantial threat to the environment. A containment boom still encircles the area above the wreck, almost directly across the channel from the yacht club in downtown Juneau. Hilbert says a very small amount of sheen, what they called unrecoverable oil product, appears at the surface every day. There could be as much as 9,500 gallons of fuel and lube oil still inside the wreck.
You know, thick wooden hull built post-World War II, so it's a very beefy tug. And then that was one of the reasons why we were unable to, during efforts in September and early October, when diving on the vessel and trying to remove the fuel at that time, you know, we were not successful in getting all the fuel off the vessel.
The contractors, Global Diving and Salvage and Southeast Alaska Lighterage, just finished with their dive assessments. A crane will be barged in over the wreck.
They'll be taking the steps to rig the vessel such that they hope to be able to refloat the vessel, dewater it post-refloating, and then tow it to another area here in Juneau, ultimately to then remove any remaining oils or hazardous materials on board.
Hilbert says they hope to have the vessel raised and dismantled within 2 months. Any wood contaminated with fuel oil will be disposed of according to hazardous materials procedures. The $900,000 cost of the operation will be covered by the National Oil Spill Liability Trust Fund, authorized by the Oil Pollution Act following the 1989 Exxon Valdez oil spill. The fund is largely maintained with an 8-cent per barrel tax placed on oil imports. Hilbert says Captain Shannon Green, the commanding officer for Coast Guard Sector Juneau, started working on a plan to tap the fund since the Challenger's sinking in September. Coast Guard Commandant Paul Zukoft approved Green's plan and use of the funds in mid-January.
So post the actual operation, the National Pollution Fund Center that manages this fund for the Coast Guard will take, you know, action to try to recover costs associated with this removal and destruction.
So it may require litigation or liens or anything else like that?
That is correct.
Have you had any sort of cooperation or any contact with the current owner of the vessel?
The current owner has not, you know, claimed any responsibility for actually owning the vessel.
Okay, so in other words, it sounds like you haven't had a very satisfactory conversation with them.
That is correct.
The Juneau Police Department has loaned their mobile incident command center for Coast Guard personnel to monitor the salvage operation from the yacht club parking lot. In addition, Hilbert says they'll have a marine mammal specialist on site at all times to monitor potential impacts to local species, and they'll place a deflection boom at Douglas Island Pink and Chum or DIPAC hatchery nearby to protect resources there in case of an unplanned discharge of oil. For now, traffic in Juneau's Gastineau Channel will not be restricted, but Hilbert says they will likely establish a no-wake zone during the actual salvage operation. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Matt Miller.
After two young men went off course on a snow machine trip from Chivac to Scammon Bay Wednesday, it was an unlikely responder who came to their rescue. KDLG's Hannah Colton has more.
Late Wednesday night, state troopers from Hooper Bay got a report that Travis Wassily and Jesse Casile, ages 17 and 20, were overdue on a trip from Chivac to Scammon Bay. Search teams from all three communities set out and searched through the night, but their efforts were hampered by strong winds and low visibility. When the search resumed Thursday, it was joined by 74-year-old Francis Charlie, a relative of the two men. Charlie said he felt a strong urge to go off in a different direction than where the searchers had been looking.
Somehow, somebody pushed me go, because that was stormy that night. I can't stay in a chair or bed, so I go.
Charlie wanted to go despite having had bladder surgery just a week before. His wife, Teresa, said she tried to stop him leaving, but it was no use.
There was nothing I could do because he kept wanting to go. He was so worried. The only thing I gave him was a bottle of holy water. That's all I let him bring.
On account of the surgery, Charlie had to stand up during his solo 2-hour search over bumpy trails. Eventually, he found Wassily and Kasaili about 15 miles east of Scammon Bay and brought them back cold and wet but unharmed. Charlie believes the boys got lost because the wind shifted overnight, and he thinks they weren't looking out for landmarks like patches of grass and old snowdrifts.
My grandpa always tells me, every time you go someplace, don't follow a wind. They'll change right away.
According to troopers, the young men had been attempting to navigate using a cell phone and ran out of gas after missing Scammon Bay. There was actually a second search and rescue going on in the same area Wednesday night. 50-year-old Johnny J. Mann and his teenage son from Hooper Bay got caught in the storm on their overnight hunting trip. Troopers noted that rescue was much easier because Mann used a personal locator beacon to alert the Coast Guard of his location. Reporting in Dillingham, I'm Hannah Colton.
Anchorage is on its way to tying an almost 50-year-old weather record. Since January 15th, there has been no measurable snowfall in the city. A 36-day winter dry spell hasn't happened since 1958, when it didn't snow from January 21st to February 25th. National Weather Service meteorologist Dave Snyder confirmed that Anchorage shouldn't get any snow tonight and will likely tie the record at midnight. And he says if it doesn't snow tomorrow, the decades-old record will be broken. But Snyder says the chance for snow Saturday evening is good, so that mark is a little less certain.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. At Alaska Pacific University, you will be inspired by the beauty of Alaska, motivated by devoted faculty, and surrounded by independent-minded, creative students pursuing their higher education goals. There's no time like the present to find out what they are all about. It's time to experience APU. Hashtag, this is our classroom. This message sponsored by Alaska Pacific University.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugia,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Aleknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, seal meat. Earlier this month, Angoon's mayor asked for help after discovering high levels of mercury in a subsistence seal. With only one grocery store in town, the small southeast village is dependent on what's in the water. And according to a tissue sample test, that might include contaminants from a nearby mine. KTOO's Elizabeth Jenkins traveled to Angoon to ask the locals how this could affect their way of life.
Alan Zuboff, a Tlingit elder, drags a rake across a pebbly surface on Angoon's tidal flats. He's been coming to this spot his whole life. Today, he's digging for cockles, a saltwater clam with a grooved brown shell. Zuboff visits here almost every day at low tide.
Because it gets pretty pricey to buy stuff from the store, or, well, pretty much anywhere nowadays, so it's best to live off the land, and besides, everything is going organic, and we've been doing it for 10,000 years. Why not keep it up?
The reason not to keep it up? The possibility of toxic metals. Angoon's Tribal Council has warned people about collecting traditional foods, like seaweed, clams, mussels, crab, cockles, and seal. Back in May, an Angoon hunter harvested a seal near the shores of Hawk Inlet, and KJ Metcalf, a Juneau resident who was boating nearby, asked if he could take a sample. Metcalf was the first ranger of Admiralty Island National Monument, and now oversees the environmental advocacy nonprofit, the Friends of Admiralty Island. When the independent lab tests were analyzed months later, he was alarmed at what he saw. Elevated levels of mercury.
As high as they've ever been in an Alaskan seal, and globally up near the top. I called Edward Kukash and said, "Do you still have that seal?" And he said, "No, it's been divided up in the community and it's eaten."
We're all still alive, you know, but we're just wondering how bad it's going to get, if it's going to get any worse, you know, if we're going to be able to fix it.
Edward Kukesh, the hunter, split the seal among 10 people, mostly family and friends from Angoon.
We make seal grease out of the seal fat and all that stuff and use it with our eggs and our fish. You know, it's a big part of like what we do, you know, in subsistence life.
Thankfully, he says no one felt sick, but he worries about the long-term health issues. Exposure to mercury can impact the nervous system. It can impair vision, speech, hearing, and cause trembling of the hands. Given the risk, Kukesh says he won't be going back to Hawk Inlet to harvest seal.
I just don't even want to take a chance and feed my family or anybody else's family, you know, anything that's contaminated.
The location in question is the home of the Greens Creek Mine, which has been operating since the 1980s. It's one of the largest producers of silver in the country, and the only mine to operate on a national monument. So it's subject to regular water quality and sediment testing that gets rolled into a monthly and annual report. It's submitted to the state's Department of Environmental Conservation. Then there's biomonitoring, the testing of sea life, like mussels and sea worms, but not seal.
It's difficult for us to see direct evidence or a link between Greens Creek's discharges to what was found in a particular seal species.
That's Alan Nakanishi. He oversees wastewater discharge permitting for mining facilities for the state's water division. He says seals are considered a high-order life form, meaning they're migratory. The biomonitoring program selects the lowest order on the food chain because they stay put. In other words, a shellfish is easier to pinpoint and use on a basis of analysis to see if anything's changed. And Nakanishi says when it comes to mercury levels, their tests show nothing has.
I guess it's in the ocean, but we can't pinpoint it to Green Streak's operation or their discharges based on what we're seeing in the effluent monitoring results.
Back in 1989, Greens Creek spilled an unknown amount of ore into the water of Hawk Inlet and went through the steps to clean it up. Since then, Nakanishi says that the water quality has returned to pre-mining levels. The seal could have traveled from somewhere else.
You know, DEC is correct. There is that probability or possibility, I would say.
KJ Metcalf again from the Friends of Admiralty Island.
But when it's that high and that dangerous, then we ought to know where it came from because that place is bad.
On the beach in Angoon, Alan Zuboff has already collected a sizable pile of cockles to fill his blue bucket. He says when he goes home at night to eat his dinner, the sweet, briny taste of shellfish is on his mind. But so are the toxic metals.
I am worried about it, but it's in the little person in the back of my mind or that's sitting on my shoulder and the little devil saying, yeah, worry.
He wonders about the whole big ocean beyond his community that is both a grocery store and a way of life. In Juneau, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week we're hearing from Ryan Kennedy, an unemployed carpenter who lives in Anchorage.
In the wintertime, carpenters are often out of work, so that's what kind of I am. I was born here. I mean, I just didn't see any compelling reason to leave, although I've been thinking of changing that. I'm really alarmed about the economy, and I told you I'm a carpenter. I've read that the capital budget is going to go down like tremendously, and that's like a death sentence for construction. So, I just have to. Wyoming, I was thinking, or Montana. I guess, you know, it's same kind of like a frontier. I've been to the big cities and stuff. I don't care for that. I used to work for the Census Bureau. There's a tremendous amount of inflow and outflow of population. People like try to pretend that Alaska is something special. I don't know if it is, really. I hate to say it, but, you know, it's just, it's a lot like the lower 48 in a lot of respects, I think. Alaskans have a very inflated sense of their statehood, and that's because it's separate from the rest of the United States. But what I'm saying is that's sort of a fiction, I think, that the cycling through of people is so much that, you know, we don't have an accent like people in the East or the South or anything like that. It's kind of like people come here and they adopt the place, you know, and I don't feel that because I was born here. So in a way, so I found that the people who are most gung-ho about being an Alaskan are people who moved here, you see.
Ryan Kennedy lives in Anchorage. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Elizabeth Jenkins, Wesley Early, and Annie Fite. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
Is all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we are online at alaskapublic.org. Like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Andrew Kitchenman and Matt Miller in Juneau, Ann Hillman in Anchorage, Hannah Colton in Dillingham, and Wesley Early in Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Fite. Our audio engineer is Mr. Dave Waldron, and I am Zachariah Hughes. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the Red Dog Mine, committed to environmental excellence. Artists make us think and question. They excite and engage. Artists inspire Alaska. The 2016 Rasmussen Foundation Individual Artist Awards Grant Program is now accepting applications. Individual Artist Awards support Alaska artists in 10 creative disciplines at all career stages. The program is open to Alaska residents only. For details and to apply, visit rasmussen.org/IAA. The deadline is March 1st, 2016. This message sponsored by the Rasmussen Foundation.
If you're looking for a career that will put you to work immediately without any educational debt, think about the apprenticeship program and learn to become a construction craft laborer. The construction industry requires hard work, provides great pay, and a bright future while building Alaska. Application deadline for the apprenticeship program is March 31st. Call to begin your debt-free career track today, 907-345-3853. This message sponsored by Alaska Laborers Training School.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.